So is this on? Is this on?
It is.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Good morning. So I'm going to give a brief presentation on some things that are happening currently at CERN. Right. Not on the slide. No, I was using the PowerPoint.
Okay, so if you go into presentation mode, that should...
No, but this is all one. It's gone. To load it again. Okay, that's working. Sorry about that. So, brief overview. So I'm going to talk about two recent incidents we had, then the status of the second data center project, and then an update of where we are with the second network hub. So the two incidents. First of all, I'll talk about a water leak into our electrical rooms. So this is the high voltage room, so where we have the 18 kilovolts cables coming in under the transformers. So for those of you who know the building, here are the transformers and the room is directly below these transformers. Okay, so on the 4th of February, by chance we discovered a large amount of water in this room. And it was initially not clear where this water had come from, but the firemen came in to start pumping it out. Now, we found out by chance because actually we were doing an electrical test that day, and so the electricians were on site and in the area, so they discovered it. If they hadn't have been there, it would have taken somewhat longer to have discovered that we had the leak. So 2 days later, there was still water in the room, and our nice 18 kilovolt high voltage cables were submerged under this water. But we continued to pump out the rooms and install dryers to reduce the level of humidity. So over the next few days, it was discovered that one of the evacuation pipes was not draining the water. So it was just full up and therefore could not take any more water. So we pumped out this pipe and installed a pump such that if we had more rain, we could evacuate the water from this pipe to allow a runoff from the outside of the building. So on the 12th of February, the electrical rooms were finally dry. Some inspection was made to see if there had been any damage to the equipment. No obvious damage was seen. And so we thought things were okay. So, finally on the 14th of February, we discovered what the problem was. There was a blockage in this pipe, a large limestone deposit. And I don't know if you can see here, but this is the deposit. So this is a normal evacuation pipe, so this is about probably best part of a meter across. So you can see it's rather large. And the pump that we installed to remove the water, you can see as well. What you can't see from this photo and what made the removal more difficult is there is a bend in the pipe, so this is vertical shaft and then the pipe runs off in this direction and this limestone deposit went round the bend. And this is about 5 or 6 meters down from ground level, so it was very difficult to access this. So there was a first attempt to remove it, which was unsuccessful, as I said, because the access is very difficult. Then on the 28th of February, we once again had water in the electrical rooms. Now, at first we thought maybe the pump hadn't worked, but we checked and the pump had worked correctly. It just wasn't had a large enough capacity to remove the water. We had a very heavy rainstorm that day, and the pump was just not powerful enough to remove the water. So again, the firemen came in to start pumping out the rooms. We installed a larger pump, and as you can see, there was quite a lot of water that was removed. Okay, so over the course of two interventions, the limestone deposit was removed. As I said, it was quite difficult to do because of its location, but they finally succeeded. And then we did a check with a camera along the pipe that runs away from the building over a distance of about 30 meters to check that there were no further deposits and the pipe was really free. And so this was confirmed because on the 6th of March we had another heavy rainstorm and we had no further leakage into the room. So after that we've done detailed checks to try to find the source of the leaks into the room. So we found the cause of why the water wasn't being evacuated correctly, but still we had to understand why the water was getting into the rooms. And there is a known issue that under the transformers, the waterproofing is not 100%. So we have to see how things develop, whether we might need to redo this waterproofing, which will mean lifting all the transformers, redoing the waterproofing, and then putting them back in place. Now, in principle, this is feasible because the transformers are redundant, but clearly this will be a major operation and it would have to be done very carefully. So for the moment, we're hoping we don't need to do this. And we also have leaks into the building through the facade of the building, so checks are being made to try and understand those. So this is the issue that we have a concrete slab, and when they laid the transformers, they put a second slab on top with waterproofing between the two. And as you can see, this is a degraded somewhat, and it isn't 100% waterproof anymore. And we can see some areas of where the water comes in. These are the cables coming from the transformers into the electrical room, and we know that some water leaks in through here. We can see some water in the false floor here, and some other areas where it's not clear if we're getting significant leakage or not. And there are areas on the facade of the building where we suspect water is getting in through the ventilation grills around this area where the cables pass through the side of the building. So these are being looked at and hopefully fixed. Okay, so the second issue we had was a site-wide power cut on the 9th of March. The initial assumption was that we had a failure of our French provider. Everything switched, what is meant to switch to Swiss Power, switched to Swiss Power, because I don't know if you know that we can get power for both the French and the Swiss suppliers. From the French supplier, we can get 160 megawatts. From the Swiss supplier, only 66. So when we switch, only the important services continue to be powered. Now, the data center didn't suffer at all because, first of all, it switched to the Swiss Power. It's one of the facilities that goes to Swiss Power, and we have UPS systems. So you might say, well, why am I reporting on this? Because we weren't affected. The reason this is interesting for us is when I come to talk about the second data center project, we're considering having none or only limited UPS coverage for that building. So in that case, we would have lost all or the majority of the systems in that building because of this cut. However, it was later discovered that we hadn't in fact lost the French power. This was a human error. Someone was working on the control system doing an upgrade, but working on the production system rather than a test system as he had thought. So when he started sending commands to check that his upgrade had worked, the commands were actually implemented, and one of the commands he sent took down one of our main substations. So we lost the whole site power because of an incorrect procedure for upgrading the control system. So this has been looked at in detail, and they've changed their procedures for how they handle such upgrades in the future. Okay, so moving on to the second data center project. I talked about this a bit at the last HEPIX workshop. The idea behind this is the experiments will need, or two of the experiments will need, significantly more power for the high-level trigger farms, because they're going to software triggers and dropping the hardware triggers for run three. There are various other needs for additional capacity, and our research director thought that it might be a better idea to build one large data center rather than multiple smaller ones. So he asked us to start looking at the feasibility of this idea. So the situation I reported at the last meeting was some initial feasibility studies had taken place. These looked reasonably positive. We'd also asked for an informal cost estimate for building the GSI Green Cube at CERN, because this looked like something which would cover our needs, and we'd known that it had been built very cheaply and very quickly. So we thought if we could do something similar, this will cover our needs, and we could do it within the very tight time schedule that we had available. We also had just received the tender results for the container solutions for Alice and LHCb. They had gone ahead with doing their tender in parallel to all these activities. So we already had a cost estimate for what it would cost for them to do their containerized data centers. And at the time, the project was viewed reasonably positive by the higher management of CERN. So things were looking pretty good. Although the higher management was positive, the experiments were very negative. They didn't want to put their high-level trigger farms in a remote building, and particularly if IT was going to be responsible for it. So they were not very keen on this idea, and also the technical departments were not keen because they're used to designing everything themselves. And the idea for this building, it would be a turnkey solution, and that would mean that they could not decide the technical systems themselves. So they were also not very happy. So we were awaiting a decision whether to go ahead with a tender or not at that stage. And a decision was made just before Christmas to go out for a tender. In fact, it was a two-stage process. First of all, there was the idea we'd go out for a tender without a market survey. So for those of you who don't know the way our procurement works at CERN, first of all, we do a market survey, which is essentially to qualify companies which are capable of providing what we're going to eventually ask for in the tender. So we basically limit how many companies we send the tender to. So the idea at the time was to combine the market survey and tender into one activity. I prepared the tender specification based on that, and then a week before the annual shutdown, they decided that they'd go ahead with the market survey as well. So running up to the end of the year closure, I had to produce market survey documents in addition, and the market survey was then sent out on the 20th of December. We were really not sure how many responses we will get, because it was quite constrained what we were asking for. We said it had to be based on an existing design, and we were aiming for a PUE of 1.1. So these are quite tight constraints, so we suspected we'd only get a limited number of responses. In fact, we got 16. Most of them were not really compliant, because they were either not based on a real existing design of the similar size and complexity of what we're asking for, or they were quoting PUEs from reference designs that were greater than 1.1. Nonetheless, we went out to tender with four of these companies. The tender was sent out on the 21st of February, and the replies were requested for the 31st of March. This tight schedule was based on the fact that we have to go to our finance committee for approval in June if we want to meet the schedule. So working back from June, we figured that this will give us just enough time to evaluate the bids, produce the necessary documentation for our finance committee, and be ready for the committee in the middle of June. So we started getting a large number of questions for clarification and requests to extend the deadline. And it became clear that if we didn't extend the deadline, we probably wouldn't get any replies. We were just asking a far too tight schedule for these companies to do a proper bid. So during the visits we had with them on site, we understood this, and so first of all we extended the deadline to the 7th of April, and then after further discussions finally to the 19th of April. So we're now getting very close to our deadline for producing the papers for the finance committee. So this has only left us a few days to evaluate the bids. What we've seen in the bids is there's a large price variation. From the first to the last, it's about a 70% price variation for the initial 4-megawatt configuration. So what we've asked for is initial 4-megawatt configuration, which can be upgraded in stages to 12 megawatts. So already at the 4-megawatt stage, there's a huge price variation. And obviously, we're still evaluating these bids, and probably we will need to do site visits to the reference installations to check out whether we believe the feasibility of their designs. So, as I said, we need to have the Finance Committee paper ready very, very soon. So we're having to work on this in parallel. And before the final decision is made, we need to produce a report to our higher management, which discusses the feasibility of this compared with other options, plus including a detailed cost estimate of what this solution will cost compared with the individual solutions of the experiments and what the IT department would need to cover its future needs. So, somehow magically after that, a decision will be made whether we go ahead with this project or not. And this has to be taken very, very soon. And as I said, if the decision is positive to go ahead, then we need to go to the Finance Committee in June. Because of the unhappiness of the experiments with this solution, we've set up meetings with them to try and look at what could be the benefits of doing this, how they could adapt their high-level triggers to fit in with this model. So we're working very closely with them to try and make this more palatable to them and get them more on board. Okay, so the second network hub project, I talked about this at the last HEPIX as well. So why do we want to do this? First, this is basically because if we don't, and we had a major problem in our current computer center in the wrong area, we will take down the whole of CERN for months and months and months. So obviously, this is a high risk position to be in, which we don't want to be in. So we want a relatively small building to house maybe up to 48 racks. We're going to push the limits a bit further than our current data center to have inlet temperatures up to 32 degrees. And all the IT load and infrastructure will be on UPS. It's currently being built on our Prevsan site, close to an electrical substation and not far from the CCC for any of you who know the site. And it's due to be ready very soon. So this is the design that I showed last time. And now you can see, the real building. So it exists. This is the new building. We've converted an existing building for the UPS systems, the electrical systems. And here you can see the cable trays for all the fiber connectivity into the building. Here you can see the IT room, first of all empty, and here with the racks being installed. And here is the ventilation room. So these are the ventilation units. This is a mixing unit to take the hot air coming out of the room and combining it with the outside cold air when needed. This is the adiabatic unit for use when we have very high temperatures in the summer, and this is basically the ventilator. So I have a small video, so hopefully it will work. So I can show you the construction. And I can take questions at the same time. It's not on that, it's on this one. Okay, let's stop it first. Now I can't see it. Can't see. Does it say play somewhere there?
I think you're right clicking.
Okay. So, are there any questions while you're watching the video?
Okay, thanks very much.
I'm sure this has been asked before, but this inlet temperature of 32 degrees for the systems sounds like it's right on the edge what the systems are specified for. Or is it special equipment that's able to handle higher temperatures?
So this is according to the ASHRAE A1 standard. The ASHRAE A2 standard allows up to 35 degrees, and that's what we're going to go for the second data center if we go ahead. And all modern equipment can handle these temperatures. In fact, there are data centers running at ASHRAE A3, which is up to and beyond 40 degrees. So the equipment is designed to handle these temperatures. Now, there is still some debate over the performance of disk drives when the temperature is higher, whether you get higher failure rates or not. We've been gradually pushing up the temperature in our current data center, and for the moment, we've seen no evidence of that. But there is some debate whether that is the case. But the servers themselves do not suffer. In this building, we will mostly have networking equipment. In our new data center, if we go ahead, we'll mostly have CPU servers and limited disk servers in the new building, which is another reason to push the limit further.
Wayne, can you comment on the price difference between the one big solution versus what the experiments want, and especially the containerized solution? I mean, is this like, I don't want to hear absolute numbers, but is this like twice as expensive or half of as expensive?
So it's a complicated question because it's not a straight comparison. So the biggest problem between going from the containerized solution to a centralized solution is because this is a high-level trigger farms, you have to get an enormous amount of data from the detector to the farms, which means we need a lot of fiber connectivity, and that is where the big cost difference comes in. We will need to, I think the estimate is between 6 and 10 million for the fiber connectivity alone. The building costs are comparable. It's really the connectivity that makes the difference.
And also the operation costs, because I can imagine that the greenfield would be much more efficient than the
solutions. So this is an interesting question, because this is something we've been debating with the experiments, whether we would gain synergies and reduce the operational costs. In terms of manpower costs, they claim not, because they will still have to run systems at the pits. So there will be systems running in the new building, systems running in the pits, and the systems running in the pits, they claim, require the most attention. So they think the cost saving, if you have a centralized facility with centralized operations, which they still don't accept either. So even if they were to accept centralized operations, they believe the cost savings would be not enormous, because it's all their other systems that have to run at the pit which take the most attention.
Have you done any benchmarking on how much more power, if any, computers draw as inlet temperatures go up? Because some of them do run fans faster, drawing more power.
Yes, no, we haven't done benchmarking on that.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
Peter.
Your suggestion of having to lift the transformers up to re-lay the concrete or re-waterproof it. I just wondered if it was cheaper to actually put a roof over the over the transformers.
You'd have to do a complete building, because a lot of the problem is when the rain comes in sideways.
So, yeah, that was the other thing I was slightly surprised at, because presumably the water ingress is quite slow if it's just going through that gap in the concrete, and then yet you had quite an enormous amount of water inside the actual room.
The days that we had the problem, we had very, very heavy rain. I mean, it was thunderstorm-type weather, and we had a lot of water in a very short period of time. But yes, we don't really understand it, to be honest, but it's worrying that it happens.
Okay, any last questions? In that case, we thank Wayne again.